Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, those sounds of mourning you just heard are the Spartan football season going down the toilet. I am Satchmo, and that laughter you heard in the background is the one, the only, the Thin Man DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the Depression, Spartan Nation.
Yeah, that seemed like appropriate music with which to end, not which with the end, which with the start party talk on TV. There's no sugarcoating what's happening this season. Maryland.
This is the beat the crap out of the Spartans world tour.
Wow. Maryland beat Michigan State 28-17. It was a stunning display of ineptitude. Just stunning.
Yeah.
Even on a day where the Michigan State running backs were, by the way, working, right? They got, a gazillion yards between the two of them. So kudos to LJ Scott and Gerald Holmes. This was ugly on all sorts of different levels. The ugliest thing, DB, the two ugliest things, they couldn't stop the run and they couldn't tackle. Missed tackle after missed tackle. And it wasn't just one player missing tackle, DB. It was everyone. I mean, everyone was missing tackles. People in the secondary were missing tackles. Linebackers were missing tackles. Defensive linemen were missing tackles. There was no gang tackling. This wasn't a defense that you or I recognized. It was just painful to watch. It was bizarre. The first half, they had their moments, right? And part of it was Maryland's just Maryland, right? Even when they run a trick play that's wide open, Maryland still can't hit it. Maryland ran this wide receiver throwback, right, where they threw backwards to the wide receiver. They had a wide receiver running down wide open down the end of the field, and they threw the ball, and they overthrew him by 10 yards. You're like, all right, dodged a bullet there. But it was terrible. And speaking of terrible, and look, DB, you and I don't normally pick on players, but Riley Bullock, first quarter, he misses some tackles. Then three personal fouls, including a targeting that ejected, targeting penalty that got him kicked out of the game. He was playing out of control. The penalties weren't even close. I just have one thing to say to Riley Cole.
You have failed this city.
Yeah.
Because
Riley Bullock was frustrated. I guess the best way to characterize that is that's symbolic of the entire Spartan season right there.
Yeah. It was the Spartans. I mean, he hit someone out of bounds, the targeting. You'd like, look, did Bullock go in trying to make a clean hit? Yeah, but in the end, it wasn't even a close decision for the referees, right? And the late hit on the quarterback, it wasn't close again. I mean, it wasn't like he was making great plays before that either. And you're sitting there going, all right, that's the senior linebacker? oh my goodness. And then you've got a true freshman or a redshirt freshman behind him, and it's just a mess, DB. But this all goes back to the defensive line. Let's face it, it all goes back to the defensive line. The defensive line can't stop the run. They can't get after the quarterback. I mean, Malik McDowell playing on the end helps, and it's the second straight game where he's done that. But outside of that, there are no answers. And all of those transfers and injuries that he's had to defensive line are coming home to roost, DB. But it's just a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess. And, you know, the one thing positive, we haven't done a podcast in a couple of weeks, but the one thing positive you could say is that last week against Northwestern and this week against Maryland, at least for a half, you could say that the offense started to look like, you know, not perfectly, but the offense for the Spartans started to look like, okay, there's some things here. You know, it could have been better in the second half. They were held to 3 points. But the defense is really, really, really where the source of the problems are, the big source of the problems. And the overall problem, and you've touched on this before, Tetchmo, and we kind of saw this sort of coming a little bit when the losing started, is the lack of leadership. There are not leaders on this team like there have been in the past. There's no Greg Jones. There's no, Max Bulla. There's no
Shalique Calhoun is walking through this door.
Yeah, Shalique Calhoun. You know, there's no Kirk Cousins. There's no, you know, those people are not there right now. And the coaching staff certainly has blame to go, you know, spread around with some of the things.
The coaching staff,
only got what they've got
to work. The coaching staff, just to interrupt you, had a John L. moment at the end of first half.
Oh, yeah.
Holy
That's
cow.
The Maryland fans were laughing at us.
Just think about this, DB. If they kicked the field goal and made it, it would have been a huge difference in the ball game. They would have entered the first half with the lead. That would have been 3 more points on the board. It would have completely changed the tone and the tenor of the second half. And instead, they run this crazy fake field goal that has no chance of working on the last play of the half. And the Maryland fans are laughing at us. And I honestly don't know what's worse.
Sacmo, did we ever get an explanation from Mark D'Antonio as to what that was?
He said, you know, it was a gut call. He thought we had a chance, and if not, he thought the offense was doing well. They put some points on the board in the second half, but he said he thought he saw it there, and he decided to go for it. I have no idea what
he
did. It was
first of all, that was way too. That was 40 some odd yards away from the end zone.
45 yards
and
with the wind.
I was sitting right in front of that. I can confirm there was nothing but 10 black jerseys over there waiting for Geiger. There was nothing there. And I don't know where D'Antonio got his information. I mean, was it the Trump campaign?
Kelly,
I have no idea. I can tell you for sure the play was open there, but we're winning in the polls.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And I heard I went up to the concession stand at halftime, and I heard fans just snickering about how awful that is. And the Maryland fans were even saying, "This doesn't look like Michigan State. Who is this? Like, who are these people?"
Let's face it, DB, this Michigan State team right now is looking very Rutgers-esque. They're out there trying, right? I mean, you could tell that they're trying. It's not that they're not trying. And so you don't want to put that label on them. But there are all sorts of weird things happening out there, right? To a relatively well-coached team, or what used to be a relatively well-coached team. The first is the missed tackles. The inability to tackle people. There are people in position to tackle DB. It's not like the defenders aren't there, right? It's not like the scheme isn't there. It's not like the coordinators didn't dial up the right defense in the moment. They did, and they're actually – the scary thing is they're actually in position to tackle. So it's not like defenders are just running around the edge and they don't have the speed to get to them. They're actually there, and then they whip. And so that's problematic. The defensive line, there's nothing you can do about the rest of the season. The defensive line is what it is. That offensive lineman playing on the defensive line. You've got true freshman playing defensive end. You've got a true freshman playing up the middle. And you've got to live with that. The linebacking crew has been dinged up by injuries. Reschke gone for the season. Riley Bullock gets kicked out of the game. You've got issues there with what was supposed to be the strength of the team. And then you've got a secondary that does a reasonably good job of keeping things in front of them. And until this week, didn't really get badly beat, or the last couple of weeks, didn't really get beat badly that deep. But we saw Saturday, DB, blown coverages in the secondary. I mean, you're the safety, DB. Your job is not to get beat deep. Yet you just look at a player run by you and don't even bother to cover him. I can tell you this. I promise you this. There's no such coverage that exists where a safety who's 20 yards downfield is supposed to let a receiver run by him. But the safety didn't even turn to run with him. Busted coverage, touchdown Maryland. It's just remarkable. I don't remember. I mean, defense and DB, we're talking not just a Michigan State defense under D'Antonio. We're talking a Michigan State defense in the last 20, 30 years, DB. I can't remember one that's looked this bad. Have I seen Michigan State defenses physically overmatched? Yes. But have I seen them just playing this poorly? I can't remember one. Can you?
I haven't seen poor play or poor coaching like this in the entire era of Mark D'Antonio. I mean, this bad. I mean, we've seen some individual players have problems. We've seen, you know, we've had that problem on the secondary forever. It seems every few years with, DBs not, you know, turning their head. Not that that's all the problem, but no, we've not seen this level of poor play. And it reminds me of the last season of John L. And I think those teams are just overmatched. This is just, I think it does speak to the injuries and what happens up front. I mean, it reminds me of, like I said before, it reminds me of teams that, you know, you can just see it right away when teams don't have the depth and they get hurt and things happen up front. And I wouldn't feel as bad if the Spartans had won a few of these games. I'd say, okay, like let's just say, for example, maybe we only lost to Wisconsin, and we know we aren't perfect, and we probably still go into this game this week thinking, yeah, we're probably not going to win, but we'll put up a good effort. I'm not convinced we're going to see good coaching or good effort this week at all from the Spartans. And the sad thing is, that's kind of predictable.
Yeah, it is kind of predictable. Well, let's face it. The key cause of this is, look, D'Antonio got a lot of credit for turning a bunch of zero stars and one stars and two stars into five-star players and going in. And Michigan State fans have been beating their chests about how, oh, we don't worry about recruiting and that sort of thing. But this senior class and this junior class, DB, simply doesn't have it, right? That's why we're seeing all these sophomores and freshmen in the game.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Michigan State whipped big time through a combination. Some of it's not their fault. Injuries, attrition, people leaving early. But some of it, they just whipped on the recruiting. Players didn't pan out or development. Or maybe they didn't whip on the recruiting. Maybe they got the recruiting right and the player development wasn't there. But something went wrong with this junior and senior class.
Well,
and
when you think
that's
about
the
this,
crux of the problem.
When you think about this senior class, too, it was after that D'Antonio hired Curtis the recruiting
Blackwell.
Coordinator. I'm forgetting his last name.
Yeah. I think Blackwell, yeah.
And, yeah, it was after this class, right after that, in fact. I think it was 2013 and 14. So this class already would have been recruited. And so that this class came in around the time we were going to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
so they were raw, they were new, they were redshirted. And then you had the departures. That happened. You know, and just stop yourself this week. Anybody from Michigan or Ohio State or somewhere else that starts saying, players all leave. Players have left their programs too and plenty of programs. It happens all the time. So I don't want to hear about anybody saying, you know, I've seen plenty of people leave other places. Alabama, has it happened? The bigger you get, the less spots there are. Those things happen. Sometimes you just whiff. The hope, my hope, and Lynn Henning's written about this, the hope is, among Spartan Nation, that this is a one-year blunder, and then next year, moving on, we're at least back to some respectability again, if nothing less than 8 or 9 wins or more.
Well,
that's all I ask for as a Spartan fan.
Yeah, the experience that these young players are getting live fire, so to speak, will ease the transition into next year. You would hope. You would hope that the more game experience they get on their belt, the better they play, the more reps they get in games, the better they're going to be. So that's the hope moving into next year. The reality moving into next year, DB, is we still don't have a quarterback. We still have offensive line issues. Hopefully the defensive side of the ball will fix itself. You get more depth on the defensive line. The linebackers are healthy. Secondary gets healthy. All these young players get old. You can sort of see the defense fixing itself, right? At least there seems to be hope on that sort of side on that side of the ball for next year. Are you feeling any hope on the offensive side of the ball for next year? We still don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Are you happy with any of the quarterbacks right now?
Well, I don't much care about Tyler O'Connor because he's going to be gone. Damian Terry, not sure. Brian Lewerke, too raw yet to know for sure. The one thing I do like about Lewerke is that I can tell with a little more seasoning, he could have some confidence. He just needs to – I think he needs to work on his on throwing a little bit better. Now, maybe he doesn't have that ability. You know, I think back to when Tyler O'Connor was a freshman and I saw him in spring ball, and I don't remember him being any different than right now. He just didn't have it. He didn't have the arm. He would occasionally throw a good pass and then occasionally just loft one up into the Spartan defense in the spring game. And I would think, oh, God. And that's when we had the little Andrew Maxwell, Connor Cook, you know, Tyler O'Connor, who's going to be the quarterback thing that happened. And ultimately we know what happened. But no, there's apparently a good recruit coming in, but we don't know anything about these recruits. They're not there yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, you want to root for Tyler O'Connor. I mean, not Tyler O'Connor, but yeah, you want to root for him, but you want to root for Brian Lewerke. The problem is right now, and unless you see the progression this year, it's sort of hard to believe in it, because right now he's not sticking with his progressions. He's getting out of the pocket too early. He's missing receivers downfield. Yeah, he's getting some benefit out of it, right? You see him pick up a 10, 15-yard gain, and you're like, all right, that was good. But you had someone open 25 yards down the field, and you missed it. And the game is moving a little too fast for him right now. You would hope with time and reps the game would slow down for him. But you also understand why D'Antonio's like saying, yeah, I'm not starting this guy at the beginning of the year. You can see what the coaches saw, and they didn't see a starting quarterback there, at least not yet. Now, maybe with time, that's going to come. But the problem is he doesn't have a defense to lean on. All right, he's got a running game that's sort of good. but definitely no defense to me. And you saw some good things, right? You saw the ability. I thought they did a good job in the first half of getting the tight ends into the mix and that sort of thing. So you saw some stuff. And when you gain over 400 yards in offense, Steve, you should have more than 17 points. And so you've got that as well. And so, yeah, it's a really weird situation, right? The best way to describe this offense, DB, is inefficient, right? They do gain yards. They just don't do anything.
Yeah.
And then you look at the stats, you look at the stats at the end of the game, you're like, how did they gain that many yards? That doesn't sound like the game I watched.
Well, right, in the BYU game, I think it was, the Spartans, if I'm not mistaken, had as much or more yards than BYU, but still lost by two touchdowns. Yeah, that's a little bit maddening, but it also gives me some hope, like I said. I mean, I feel like when I watched the Spartan offense in the first half Saturday, it wasn't perfect. The offense committing, holding penalties and things is just, they're just getting frustrated. But I feel like the offense is a little bit closer with a few things once a quarterback is determined. It would be a lot easier, I think, for Brian Lewerke if everyone around him was very experienced and good, right? If he had a great offensive line, really good receivers, good running backs, and then you have the quarterback to fill in the hole, but you know what? It makes it easier for the quarterback when you have that type of a situation. The guys will help him along. It's just like with an NFL team. You bring in a rookie quarterback with all that around you, you've got a good wall around you, and so it's not going to be perfect. There'll be some mistakes. But everything around him is so uneven. I'd like to see more. Now, also, he was thrown into a funky situation, too. I mean, I don't think that Mark D'Antonio expected at the beginning of the year that Tyler O'Connor wouldn't pan out, other than an injury. And then Damian Terry just seems completely MIA. I don't even see him get in the game.
Look, he might be a little nicked up, or maybe he's just not good enough to get in the game. I have no idea what's going on with Damian Terry. I will say this, right? If you took a look at Maryland, this is just a sign of how bad Maryland is, right? They would put nine men in the box, and they would still struggle to stop them. And it wasn't because of really good blocking at Michigan State Smart either. It's just that Maryland is just that bad. But that's what Michigan State's going to be facing, right? They're going to be facing eight, nine-man fronts the entire year saying, yeah, let's see you beat us with your arms and your receivers. And R.J. Shelton's going to get some balls deep. And when he does, that's going to be the extent of the offense. Donnie Corley's disappeared. You see him out there?
Well, I think the defenses have figured that out. I mean, he has disappeared. You're right. I mean, the offense right now is basically if L.J. Scott can make a run or R.J. Shelton can do something. I mean, if the Spartans get a complete pass to R.J. Shelton and he gets open in space, he'll go. I mean, R.J. Shelton is good. And the same thing with L.J. Scott. If you get him some good blocking like they did on a couple of those touchdowns, that looked like the Spartans that we saw a few times in the last couple of years. That reminded me of that. So it gives me a little bit of hope. But then there's no consistency, you know. I think the offensive line, not perfect, but it's starting to come together a little. Now it's hard to gauge because then that Maryland defense, it's not that great. It's just like, all right, you know. Wisconsin's
the Maryland
defense, that was the real thing.
Is worse than the food at the Green Turtle.
You know what's so funny about that, and this is why you can't read anything into projections. At the beginning of the year, the prognosticators were actually saying that Maryland had one of the better defenses in the Big Ten. Where's the buzzer sound effect?
Yeah, that is a good point. Where is the buzzer?
Right, exactly.
I queued up another sound effect or something.
Right. So you never can believe.
Go ahead.
Look at Michigan State and Notre Dame in week three of the college football season were, or week two going into that game, or week three, whatever it was, were 8-11. And now both of them are on the short trip to nothingness.
Well, we know Brian Kelly's stuffing his faces with Hershey Kisses.
Brian Kelly's like waiting for the season to end so he can go interview at LSU or Texas or somewhere else.
Brian Kelly's looking for that bye week so he can go to Hershey Park and just gorge.
Oh my goodness.
And D'Antonio, poor D'Antonio, man. After every game, man, he's just going home and says, "Give me a slice." Not even say, "Give me some pasta." You know, get that spaghetti with the tomato sauce and the marinara sauce and the meatballs, and just leave me alone.
Yeah, he's just sitting on the back porch with a can of Bud and a plate of spaghetti, and he's just swinging on a swing, and he's. I've never heard him after the Maryland game more dejected, and the player. The one thing I was encouraged about after the game, if there was some bright light that I could see, is that I appreciated that I heard Chris Fry on the defensive side and R.J. Shelton on the offensive side. R.J. Shelton called out the defense, Satchmo. Bless you. He called out the defense, R.J. Shelton. And he saw what the defense – R.J. Shelton was standing on the sideline for Michigan State and saw exactly what his own defense was doing wrong and called him out. And I applaud him for that. I actually like to see that. I want to see these players get mad at each other and hold themselves accountable. And I'm starting to see that finally – a little late into the season, but I'm starting to see that.
I think there's a little bit of that
Chris
behind Fry's, the scenes, right?
I like Chris Fry's attitude.
Yeah, Fry's attitude is good. It's like, look, we got to fix ourselves before we can worry about Michigan. I mean, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, and he's right, yeah.
He's right, but, I mean, I think we've seen a bit of that throughout the season, right? You have players-only meetings. You had all sorts of weird things going on, right, where – I think the players acknowledge and understand just how messed up this situation is, and they're trying to fix it. But, I mean, realistically, what can they do?
Yeah, I mean, you can only do so much. I think everybody has to be, you know, on the same page. And then, you know, it's one of those things where when I watch the Spartans, the one thing that you have to remember about this team and then any sport really is that you don't just throw on the jersey and suddenly you're Superman. You know, you have to bring it. You have to work for it. You have to work hard. Mark D'Antonio preaches working hard. Spartan teams work hard. And I don't know what's happening in practice. I see, and I think you said this to me, Satchmo, offline. I see some players on the team, particularly on the defense, whose body language tells me they've quit. They've given up. They don't want to be there. And that's a sure sign of just, then you can forget it. You can just pack it in then. And if half the team feels that way, then you're not going to win.
Yeah, and you can see that in the little things, right? You can see that in the fact that, look, when somebody gets knocked down, there isn't someone there going over there and picking them up, right? And you just don't see that normally in college football. Usually, guy gets hit to the ground or put on the ground. You got other guys helping him get up. You just don't see that. When things go wrong, right, there's no anger or sense of, oh, wow, we just screwed it up. There's like, oh, let's jog back to the sidelines and hear what our coaches have to say. It just seems like they've accepted the current state of things instead of fighting to change it. And that's, I think, what's bothering me. It's not that necessarily that they quit. It's just that they've accepted the fact that they're bad. And that seems unacceptable. And that, to me, that's the most troubling part of it. Right, it looks like the season just defeated them, and they can't wait for basketball season either. And that's just sort of where things are with this football team. It's just really bizarre. There seems to be, at least from the outside looking in, a distinct lack of camaraderie. If you take a look at previous games, and maybe, look, this is a thing that winning cures everything or winning hides all your flaws, and that stuff was there, or maybe winning generates the excitement necessary to do these sorts of things. But this doesn't look like a team that's excited to be out in the field, that's flying around, that's happy to be with each other. This doesn't look like one of those teams. This looks like a team that looks like it would rather be somewhere else when they're playing. And this looks like a team that's a bit disinterested out there. And so I wouldn't say they quit. I think they are trying. But I think there's a certain passion that seems to be lacking, and it could be that the seasons just beat them up. It could be they're all so young and confused and don't know what they're doing that's just overwhelming them. And so you have you saw a flash of it when LJ Scott high stepped it into the end zone. You're like, all right, a little energy out of the offense. That's nice, right?
Yeah.
But it's been a little lacking, and I think you put your finger on something there, TV. This is one of the issues. If this was the Dan Patrick radio show, we'd say their passion bucket isn't full.
Yeah. They're not right.
Yeah.
And you know, another thing, I think about somebody like Darian Hicks, for example, and you know, when you look at Darian Hicks as part of the larger team, Darian Hicks was probably a pretty solid player. But then suddenly when Darian Hicks was in the spotlight and had to be the guy, maybe then more of his flaws are exposed and maybe he's not that guy. When I think about people in the secondary.
Well, this goes back to something I've been saying all year long, is we've got a bunch of guys that were good role players, but they're not stars, right? Some actors can be stars and some actors can be supporting actors, right?
Yeah.
The upperclassmen on this team seem to be really good supporting actors, but none are leading stars, right? None are ready for the big stage. And that's the problem. And you have to play these guys. Because you can't go through an entire season not playing them. You've got to play them. And in many of these cases, these guys, even though they're not ready for starting roles, are better than the raw and inexperienced freshmen behind them. And so, yeah, it's just an ugly, ugly season. DB, it's not going to get any worse. Before we get to it's not going to get any worse, let's talk about the coaching for a little bit. We talked about D'Antonio and the panic special teams. Let's say this about special teams last week. Special teams was not the worst unit on the field last week, which could be the first time we've said that in a while, right? Geiger made his one field goal attempt. They caught the ball when it was punted to them. And you could hear the sarcasm in my voice, but that's actual progress. RJ Shelton had some good kick returns. When we kicked the ball off, it didn't go out of bounds. And we didn't give up any kick returns or punt returns for touchdowns. So all in all, a big step up for special teams this week. I feel like we're grading Spartan special teams on the Donald Trump debate curve. So then you've got that. And so good for them. The offense, okay, signs of life in the first half, not so much in the second half. Defense, oh, Nelly. But the coaching, DB, what's going on there? These players clearly aren't ready to play a 60-minute game. And then in the second half, Spartan coaches are just getting out-coached, right? I mean, the adjustments other teams make versus the adjustments they make, it's no contest. The coaching, DB, has really been exposed this year.
Yeah. I have to say, people kind of snicker at me But I think the Spartans' coaching secrets were undone a little bit last year by Alabama a little bit in that game and in that College Football Four. And I think it was important for the coaching staff to try to make some tweaks, but also to do it within a way that fit the personnel of the team. And it was a lot of square pegs, round holes things going on, and some of it was unavoidable with the injuries and whatever happened, but they were a little slow to it. I think people have been a little bit too overly critical of Dave Warner, and I think that the offense deserves a fair shake. I love what they did last week against Northwestern. They just said to hell with it, and they burned the playbook, and they went and put up 40 points. I mean, it restored my faith a little bit that they could do something. Now, again, you're playing a defense that sucked, basically. I'm having a big problem with Mike Tressel and Harlan Barnett. I think something has to be done there. I think those two guys are position coaches, but the Spartans miss Pat Narduzzi like there's no tomorrow. And there's no Pat Narduzzi walking through the door. But I think that's a place where Mark D'Antonio, they have to get their identity back on defense.
Yeah. Do they have to get their identity back on defense? Yeah, I think a lot of it is injuries. A lot of it is them playing young people. I feel like Harlan Barnett actually calls a pretty good game, right? I think what's happened, and this happened while Narduzzi was here, so it's not like Narduzzi didn't face these issues.
Right.
He just left before the issues became exacerbated. Offenses were starting to figure out the Michigan State defenses, right? Pressures weren't getting home as frequently, right? There's a reason why Michigan State went from a blitzing team to a team that was getting their pressure through the defensive line. It's because teams were figuring it out. Teams were figuring out that the best way to attack the Michigan State secondary and the press quarters coverage and all of that sort of stuff is to isolate the safeties, get the safeties one-on-one, and go deep over the top. People knew this. People knew one of the best routes to run against the Michigan State defense was the wheel route, and that once a game they could hit the wheel route for a good 50, 60-yard gain. All right? People knew these things, so none of these are secrets anymore. And so it doesn't matter whether it's Narduzzi or Harlan Barnett or any of that. So just schematically, they've had to change, and you've seen some of that this year. You've seen them dropping off in soft zones a lot more than they used to do. You've seen different coverage schemes, right? Ultimately, the problem is right now, Harlan Barnett doesn't have the horses. Look, Harlan Barnett is calling good games. He's got players in position to make tackles and make plays. You want to know what? They're not making it. You can go back to you can pick any game, DB, this year and say, wow, if they just caught the interception that was thrown right to them, that would have been a pick six going the other way, and then the game might be different. You could say that for the Wisconsin game, right? It didn't happen. And so I feel like the Michigan State defense is being put in position to make plays. They're just not making them. And so, all right, you can blame the coaches in terms of why aren't they tackling? Why are there busted coverages and that sort of thing? In that sort of sense, I feel okay blaming the coaches, but I'm not going to blame the schematics because I actually feel like Harlan Barnett calls a pretty good game and has made some decent adjustments this
year. Right. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with Warner on the offensive side of the ball is the run every first down, you know, offense.
Well, yeah. That's gotten extremely predictable. It's gotten extremely predictable. But it's on both sides of the ball, it's a co-coordinator effort, right? Isn't it Bowman and Warner?
Yeah, it's Bowman and Warner, but Warner's doing the play calling, right? And it's Barnett and Tressel. Barnett is the one that's actually in the press box dialing up the defenses and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Sometimes for the sake of change to get a new voice, you're not going to do it right now, but sometimes for the sake of change, maybe you have to just make a tough decision. And Mark D'Antonio will get there at the end of the year to see if he needs to do that. I mean, you know, Mark D'Antonio's earned the right to decide if that happens. My sense is he may not do anything at all, but I wouldn't blame him if he did do something on both sides of the ball.
See, my biggest problem with Dave Warner, besides the run on first down, every first down situation, is I feel like Warner's done a good job of integrating bits and pieces of what other offenses do well into our offense, right? So you see read options, you see quarterback keepers, you see quarterback draws and that sort of thing. So you see all those sorts of things. But in the process of doing that, the offense has lost a bit of its identity, right? And so when it was a Kirk Cousins offense, you knew they'd hand it off and you'd throw all of these quick slants and inside routes, and that's the way it's going to go. With Connor Cook, you knew you had the live arm and you'd be throwing the ball downfield a lot and you'd still be running a lot. And so you had all those sorts of things, and you had all of these interesting wrinkles that made the Michigan State offense a more modern offense, not just a pure pro set offense. Because I don't think you can win in college football with just a pure pro set offense anymore. The problem is now it feels like the Spartan offense lacked a little bit of identity. And it was okay when you had Connor Cook, and it was okay when you had Kirk Cousins, because basically what they were doing was very Belichickian to a certain degree, right? They were drawing up an offensive game plan on a weekly basis that was designed to attack that particular defense. Yeah, the foundation was in the running game, but it was still that the passing game was designed to attack that particular defense. And you saw that a lot more with Connor Cook. Connor Cook was an elite NFL caliber talent. But without Cook there, and you're seeing the flaws come forward, this offense doesn't have an identity, right? Right? It just doesn't. This offense doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a read option offense? Does it want to just be a straight power offense? Does it want to be a play action offense? What does it want to be, right? Does it want to throw the ball to the outside? Does it want to feature the tight end? It's missing. And so because of that, he does some things really well, and he seems to come in with a script that does really well. But when it comes time to make adjustments and go into the second half and get things done, it's a lot harder because as that offensive identity doesn't exist as a core. They have a lot of really good plays, but they're sort of lacking in that philosophy standpoint. And I think that's a problem. And the other problem, DB, is execution. There are a lot of plays on offense to be had that they're just missing. And when players miss those plays, it just looks really bad, and the coordinator gets a lot of blame for it.
Well, you know, as for the quarterback, and again, we may lack one with a good arm, I think as far as that goes, that's a next season thing. You just try to hope that – I mean, I like the fact that D'Antonio's showing courage to put the freshman out there. I mean, I think at this point he, you know, just ran out of options. But I think, you know, going into the spring camp, you know, you open that up and then you have this freshman coming in that I'm forgetting his name. He's supposed to be very good. Kid is from Ohio, I think.
Well, you have DeWeaver, right?
Mikhaios DeWeaver, yeah. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, now again, we don't know what he is, but, you know, open it up all the way even to him and see what happens. But that's for next season. Right now, I think you just keep sticking with Lurkey and see what he can do.
Yeah, I think that pretty much has to be it. All right. We spent way too much time talking about Michigan State football.
We did spend too much time. I guess, you know, the atmosphere there in College Park Satchmo is just leaves a lot to be desired. It's just very flat. It's not different than when you and I went a couple of years ago. There was actually a lot of it. There was a ton of empty seats for the game. Tons of people leaving at halftime. It's Maryland's a basketball school. There's no doubt about that. I look around at schools like Maryland and Rutgers. Well, Rutgers is not. There's not a lot to say all the way around with them. But I look at Maryland, and I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of in a Bush League stadium when I'm there watching a game. It's just it's not a Big Ten team. I don't know what it is. And their fans, they act so entitled. It's just really annoying.
The
university
is
likable, but they're annoying.
Yeah, the thing about Maryland fans is it's a combination of like two of the worst things, right? They don't care about football, but they're still arrogant about their team. And that's like the worst combination of all. At least Michigan fans care about their team. I mean, they're arrogant, but they care about their team. Maryland's we're arrogant, and we're going to leave at halftime because we don't care. We're a basketball school. I suspect if DJ Durkin has success there, they might become more of a football school. But right now, their DNA is basketball, right? That's all their programs care about. And I think it's going to take a lot of success, not just a little bit of success, but a lot of success. Like Michigan State, if you give them a little bit of success, it's football all the way. It's like the Detroit Lions, right? The state of Michigan is a football. Look, between the Lions, the Tigers, the Red Wings, and the Pistons, right? The Lions have never experienced success, but they're still the number one team in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still the number one team in the city. It's always going to be like that. It's not true in Maryland. Football isn't king. Basketball's king there. And football is a giant party. And football is a reason for these kids to get drunk in Maryland. And that's all it is.
All right.
It's just terrible.
It's tough. On the one hand, I feel bad because, you know, you're not going to get Nick Saban or somebody to go to Alabama or from Alabama to Maryland or Les Miles or somebody of that nature. I mean, you know, it's just not that kind of a place. And so they're in a tough spot. They just come right into the Big Ten and they're tossed. And it almost seems like they need to be in the junior league first. You know, maybe there needs to be like a play-in league or something. Michigan State would fall back into it this year, but you know, just some sort of a B league to get yourself into the big time or something, because it's not. It's a little unfair. You know, there's haves and have-nots, and Michigan State has shown that they can be a have. You know, when they're doing well, and they still are in the have category. It's just not going right this year, I guess. I don't know how much we want to dwell on this week's game, Stashmo, but I think we both expect sort of a route going the wrong way. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, we're going to get murdered.
There's no real way to say it, yeah.
There's no real way to – look, Donald Trump sums up how I feel about Michigan Week right now.
I would like to promise and pledge to all of my voters and supporters, and to all of the people of the United States, that I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
I guess that's how Spartan Nation feels tonight.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel about Michigan right now.
I accept them only if we beat them.
Yeah, this week exists and this game exists only if we win.
Oh boy! This is one of those years where I sort of wish D'Antonio just said, you know, you guys just have the game in Ann Arbor this year. Because I hate losing to Michigan, but if I'm going to end up having to lose to them really bad, I'd rather just be in their stadium and let them have their fun than for us to lose a game in front of our own fans and look silly. I said this to you earlier, Satchmo. I would love if Mark D'Antonio just brought the entire Spartan team out this week in nothing but black jerseys with numbers on them and no identifying characteristics, and they removed all the Michigan State logos from the field and just got rid of everything, and just like they were just this no-name team, change the mascot, make it look like Rutgers, do all these crazy things, like, you know, send dogs onto the field during the game or whatever. I don't care. I mean, just so that when you watch the highlights of this, it just didn't – it was Michigan against some unidentifiable team playing out there. And maybe it would actually confuse them a little bit. Or they'd look stunned if the Spartans came out in, like, these all red jerseys with just numbers on them and red helmets. And you could just say, oh, it's a throwback day for MAC. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
That would be hilarious. That would be hilarious. And I think Graham Couch might be feeling the same way you did, because he just published his first basketball column of the year.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, you know, it's been a while since we've said, I can't wait for basketball season. I mean, we've said that, but we used to say it. We used to say it. When John L. Smith was the coach, we used to say it because John L. Smith wasn't the coach.
Yeah, but now we're saying it because we really need it.
Yeah, and it's just truly, it's sort of hard to watch, but it's like a car accident, and it keeps getting worse. And we at least thought at one point, like, you know, you predicted the upset by Indiana, but if that was our only loss right now, or we played really bad in a couple games, but we won these last few, I'd be like, all right, we're not perfect, but maybe we could be an 8-win team. Maybe we could be a 9-win team. My confidence is so low with the Spartans, I'm not even sure they can beat Rutgers at this point.
Yeah, well, let's not go back.
I feel like we can pull that one out, but like that's our season now. Unless there's some, you know, massive change of pace. Look, I expect the Spartan team this Saturday to come out at least at the beginning and look decent until it's just shown that they just can't compete with this team. I mean, the only thing that's going to be an interesting aspect, and not the Spartan fans, will be who scores more points against the Spartans, Michigan or Ohio State. I think they're both going to have a competition to see who puts up more. I'm not sure who wins that argument yet.
Yeah, I have no idea who wins that argument.
I think it's Michigan, but it's just by a little. I think they're both going over 50 on us.
Yeah.
I think Michigan's putting up about 56 points on Saturday, and the Spartans, maybe 17, maybe south of 17. It's going to be ugly.
Michigan's got an outstanding defense, so they really do. And they're not going to let Michigan State run the ball on them the way other teams have. And
no.
Yeah, this has all the signs and makings of an ugly beatdown.
Yeah, it's gonna be an ugly beatdown, and they're already motivated anyways. Even if the Spartans were ranked number 3, not that that would matter, but then you'd say, all right, well, we're in for a good competitive game here. My only hope is that the Spartans somehow manage to only lose by 5 points or something, which is not going to happen. And that would be, to me, I'd say, well, all right, if you told me we were going to lose, you know, 28-23, I'd say, well, all right, I'll take that instead of 58-3. But, yeah, this could be quite bad. I've never been more unexcited about a Michigan State-Michigan game.
Normally I'm a throw-out-the-record sort of guy when it comes to the rivalry. Not this time around. All right, before we –
We've had our fun with them, Satchmo. There's no doubt. I mean, there's been a few years now. Just want to say this before we move on. There's been a few years now where, you know, we said the same thing about them, that they have no chance. I mean, a couple of those years when Brady Hoke was the coach and they were coming in, I didn't think Michigan had stood any kind of a chance at all in a couple of those games. And sure enough, they didn't. We kicked their ass around the field. Like I said, I wish the game wasn't at home, but oh well. You got to play them all.
Yep. It's payback time.
Yeah.
The Before we go to basketball, which starts its exhibition season on Thursday, just wanted to touch on one note. Penn State upsets Ohio State.
Yeah. How about
that? I don't
think
anyone saw that coming.
No, not at all. I bet the Penn State fans. What was it? So, Satchwell, you have some relation to people who are Penn State fans. What was their reaction to that? Were they happy, but then also sort of like, well, now getting rid of our coach might be a little harder, or what was the feeling?
I think they were too giddy to actually think about the ramifications of the victory.
Yeah.
The ramifications of that victory will settle in the next time Penn State has a bad loss.
Yeah, if they turn around and lose to Illinois or something, then, you know,
yeah,
back to normal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah,
we will see.
I was laughing because these polls, Sachmo, Penn State was unranked. I'm sorry. Ohio State only fell to 6. Yeah. I think Ohio State has likely gotten knocked out of the top 10 with that. I mean, that's just ridiculous. They only kept it there because Nebraska's 7 and they're playing in a couple weeks.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is the AP voters really like Papa John's pizza.
were there sightings of Urban Meyer eating Papa John's pizza on Saturday after the state college? You know, I'd pay money to watch Urban Meyer eat Papa John's because you know he's just not doing well. You know you better call suicide watch if Urban Meyer is munching on a Papa John's.
Rumor has it that the order was placed right after the blocked kick.
He's got the app on his phone. He's got the app on his phone. He never looks at it during the game, but every time they start losing or something's going wrong, like the first half of the Wisconsin game, he probably was looking at the menu at halftime.
I could just see an assistant in the press box going, damn it, I got no bars up here. I need a landline.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's too funny. Oh, man. I mean, look, I'm happy for Penn State that they got a win there. I mean, it's always nice to see, you know, underdogs. But, you know, I mean, obviously with the Big Ten, Satchmo, it really just comes down to, I mean, in the Nebraska, Wisconsin play this week. And so you're going to find out right there who's the best team in that division. My money's on Wisconsin, but we'll see what happens. And then it's Michigan and Ohio State on the other side. I'm not sure if Ohio State loses again until they play Michigan, and then that's the game that decides it probably, you know.
Yeah,
that
is the game that's going to decide it. All right, basketball. Exhibition season starts Thursday, DB. And yep. Michigan State, thanks to injuries, including one to Gavin Schilling, has two players taller than 6 feet, 5 inches tall on the team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a talented team.
Talented team.
It's got the potential to be really good, but they only have two players taller than 6 feet, five. How do you see this season shaking out? Tough schedule, too, by the way.
Well, yeah, I think the first part of the year is going to be difficult for the Spartans. I mean, I don't expect them to walk into Cameron Indoor and beat Duke. That'll be a learning experience. I'm not sure about Kentucky. I think that could probably be, it just depends on which Kentucky team shows up that night. Arizona will be quite a great challenge right off the bat. I'm not sure I expect to win there. So there'll be some good learning experiences. Having said that, I get concerned about this team with that issue. But then on the other hand, when I look around the Big Ten, nobody's popping out at me saying you know, I got this. So I still feel like the Spartans remain in the mix from that standpoint, and you can't underestimate the Spartans. They're a talented team, and maybe this is the kind of team that surprises us, but I'm kind of approaching it with sort of a bit of caution and a bit of, you know, hope. That makes sense.
This comes down to the basically how well they rebound, right? Because the team will defend. It'll certainly defend better than last year's team, because I think last year's team was the worst defensive team Izzo's ever had. It comes down to how well they rebound. If they're able to rebound and keep the rebounding margin even, right, with the size disadvantage that they have, then I think this team is talented enough to win. But if they can't rebound, they can't trigger the fast break. If they can't trigger the fast break, they're playing a half-court offense. So this is a team that I think wants to get out and run. But this is all going to come down to rebounding. And not only rebounding, but also playing against teams with size. Because normally Michigan State's got a lot of size, and that's not an issue. This year, they don't have a lot of size, and this is going to be a serious issue. And so, all right, can they rebound? And then can they defend against teams with size? Those are your two big issues. And if they can do either one of those, I think they have the athleticism on the wing where they can attack the rim and score without worrying about size. And I think they've got the shooting on this team where they're going to be okay. It just comes down to how they manage the size issue. And that's just a big deal. And we don't know how that's going to play out. We really don't. And rebounding and defending against size, it's going to be problematic. And I think they're going to struggle during the first half of the year because Michigan State's going to have to play a lot of small ball on offense. And that's not the way Michigan State's played offense recently, right? You've had a lot of the ball going into the post and then running the offense through the post or running the offense with a pick and roll with a big. And this is going to have to be different. This is going to have to be more of a Golden State Warrior sort of offense, right? With a lot of ball movement, a lot of cutting to the basket, a lot of movement away from the ball. And so it's going to be a different sort of offense. And so it's going to take and then a lot of new players that have to find their way and get some chemistry and that sort of thing. And so a lot of work, DB, but I'm with you. I think the first half of the season is going to be brutal. And I think the second half of the season, they're going to come around. I think they're going to need a late push to get to the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
I think they're going to have to win a couple games in the Big Ten. I think they'll get in as a 7 or 8 seed, but I think once they're there, they can do some damage. But by that point, they'll have learned how to play small.
Yeah. I can see that. I'm kind of thinking the same way. Yeah. I have my eyes open. I really don't have an expectation. Throw the ranking away. You know, we've seen great Spartan teams fumble it, and we've seen lesser Spartan teams surprise us. So we'll just see what happens.
If Gavin Schillen was healthy, my expectations for this team would be completely different.
Yeah. That was a huge loss. That's a huge loss, yeah.
All right. Last thing before we get out of here, DB, and we've gone way over what we planned on. Drew Sharp passed away at age 56. A sad note, he was the MSU beat writer at the Detroit Free Press for a long time. Then he went on to be a columnist. One person you and I know, DB, was not a big Drew Sharp fan. Was not impressed with his writing. And to be honest, you know, Drew Sharp, what I remember about Drew Sharp is wasn't particularly his writing, but his willingness not to take the party line. To me, in the Detroit media, the columnists, the beat writers, everyone involved are too cozy with their teams and their sources. For some for good reasons, some not so much, but they tend to buy the party line a little bit too much. Drew Sharp wasn't afraid to be a flamethrower, but more importantly, Drew Sharp was willing to stand up and take the opposite point of view. he was willing to say, you want to know what? No. You guys are just bad. Or you want to know what? No, this isn't acceptable. You need to play better. And he was willing to stand up and say, no, you guys just stink. It was a voice that was important in the Detroit sports media landscape. And it's a voice that's going to be missed.
Yeah. I agree. I grew to actually like Drew Sharp. When I first started reading Drew Sharp, I didn't like him. He just came across sort of bitter and angry. And what changed me for Drew Sharp was I had the knowledge, you know, and I think it was a bias on my part, but he attended the University of Michigan. So right away, I just didn't like him. And I didn't know anything about him. But what changed for me was how well I thought and how evenly covered he did covering the University of Michigan basketball scandal in the late 90s. And when I read the way he covered that and the way he sat in the news conferences in Chrysler Arena and asked very, very pointed questions about who knew what and when and why, that changed my opinion of him a lot. And I
Questions no one else in the media would have asked, by the way. Or at least no one else in the Detroit media would ask.
Yeah, he was drilling into them, and he didn't hold back. And then I saw some of the favorable columns that he wrote, some nice pieces that he wrote about Mateen Cleaves and some of the Spartan basketball players, especially those great Izzo teams in the late 90s and early 2000s. And Sharp suddenly was covering Michigan State a lot. And, yeah, he was critical a lot, but I appreciated the criticism because with the criticism, he also wrote, you know, he could be sort of, you know, the bad cop, sort of, you know, I was sort of laughing at Mitch Albom's column writing about the Lions, and he, you know, Mitch Albom would say, well, I'll write about the quarterback, and Drew is just going to write about same old Lions every week, you know. And that was funny to me. That's exactly what it was. And so, but I appreciated his opinions, and he didn't rub me the wrong way like, you know, he did our colleague. And, you know, it's like with anybody. Some people like certain people and some people don't, and he's going to be missed. It was such a shock to see somebody go. He was young. I mean, 56, you know, it was sudden what happened. And it reminds you when that happens that, you know, life is here and gone sometimes pretty fast.
Yeah, two things struck me in terms of the coverage, and two things struck me in terms of coverage of his death that I found remarkable. And by the way, Mitch Albom, with his appreciation for Drew Sharp, proved once again that when he puts his mind to it, he's one of the best writers in America. The problem is he doesn't put his mind to it very often. two things that struck me in the coverage is, one, the relationship between Drew Sharp and Thomas. And that relationship could be feisty, it could be combative, but it was clearly built on mutual respect. And there was some sort of friendship there. And I don't think most people were expecting to see that or hear about that. And I thought that was intriguing. It's a testimony to the type of person Drew Sharp was. The other two things that have struck me is Drew Sharp is an original Detroit success story, right? He went to Renaissance High. Then he went to the University of Michigan, and then he started working for the Free Press and the Zone editions, and then he was an Agate editor, right? And he kept writing, and they said, all right, let's make you a reporter. All right, let's make you a beat reporter for Michigan State. All right, let's make you a columnist. And a kid from Detroit that made good, and then he overcame a serious stutter, an almost debilitating stutter, and you wouldn't know it listening to him host the different video segments he did and participate in podcasts and show up on TV. Mm-hmm. And you had no idea. So he was an absolute original Detroit success story. The other thing that struck me was there was a Detroit Free Press columnist, and I forget which one. It doesn't matter. But his kid had made varsity football this year. And obviously high school football was played on Fridays. And so Drew Sharp went up to the columnist and said, look, I'll take all the Saturday road trips. That way, you can stay on home and watch your kid play high school football on Friday night. Right? That's a stand-up thing to do. And that's the type of thing Drew Sharp was known for away from, I mean, outside of his public persona, right? He was known for being a stand-up guy, a guy with a various sense of humor, and that sort of person. And I think it's important that stories like that came out this week, because it gave people a chance to know Drew Sharp away from the press box and away from the college. All right. Anything else, DB?
No, do not have anything else. I think we've covered the bases here. And Spartan Nation, just keep your head up. You know, this will be forgotten soon enough.
Yeah, I do keep your head up, Spartan Nation. It will be forgotten. You will make it through the football season. You will make it through the basketball season. Things will get better. They might get worse before they get better, but they will get better.
But we'll be here for you. We'll be here for
we
you.
Will
we promise
here.
Not to talk about football too much anymore after this game. For this season. We're going to talk about the election coming up next week.
Yeah, we will have a special politics edition of Spartan Talk next week. No fight song to play us out. We play Taps to come into the show. We will play Taps to go out of the show in honor of the many Spartan, many members of the Spartan family we've lost this season. It's been a tough year for Michigan State fans. So we'll play Taps on the way out, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye bye.
Bye bye.